This is the Gradowski of WeAreChange.org here in London, England. And of course, we are at a pub and we got a very special treat for you guys today. We are joined by the one and only Tony Gosling, former BBC journalist turned independent journalist and investigator and also radio talk show host. And we're going to be talking about a slurry of very important issues that deal not only with the United Kingdom, but the United States and, of course, Bilderberg. Now, as we know, this year, Bilderberg has had very significant changes than all the other years beforehand. They didn't announce where they would have this year's meeting. They're being more secretive than they ever have before. And Tony has been following Bilderberg for a very long time now. And we were just talking. There's a lot of important aspects when it comes to the media and a lot of important aspects when it comes to the steering committee and the changes that have been occurring behind the scenes with the people who are pulling the strings of the Bilderberg group who are pulling the strings behind all the other aspects of society. So, Tony, I just wanted to kind of get your perspective. What have you been seeing, especially with the steering committee changes within the Bilderberg group?
Look, we're in London, and this is where I did my... I worked for about a year and a bit here for the BBC. It should be simple, shouldn't it, that you go into a radio studio, you just tell people what's going on. In fact, it was when I was working in around 1989, 1990 at Marylebone High Street, Greater London Radio. You walk into a studio, you're talking to millions of Londoners all about basically whatever's going on, and we'd have other radio stations on. We'd be looking at what was going on. We'd look at the wires. And we had a team of about, I suppose, 25 reporters, editors, etc., just letting Londoners know what was going on. Now, the situation now, I think, is very different because a lot of the people who were good at that have been slowly weeded out from the BBC. There was big changes went on in the late 1980s with John Burt, the director general that was brought in. But the previous generation of reporters had always been fiercely independent. And what happened in the late 1980s was Margaret Thatcher, along with Victor Rothschild, who was a Labour peer, decided to get rid of the Director General because they were being critical of the Conservative Party, and that was Alistair Milne. Funnily enough, Alistair Milne, the Director General's son, is Seamus Milne, who's now the Communications Director for the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn campaign. So it's a small world, but the changes he brought in, John Burt brought in, were absolutely devastating. I mean, we could see them in the early 90s. For example, cost centres across the BBC, where if you wanted to talk to someone else in the BBC, you had to get the permission of a producer, etc., fill in a little form, this kind of thing. So what it did is it just took away the incentive for a big organisation to be able to use its kind of forced multiplication of all these journalists around the country in different specialist areas in different parts of the country. So that's why I'd start off by saying is that actually it should be really simple to do decent broadcasting. What's happened is effectively the business community, because that's what John Burt represented. And there's a great new book out by Professor Tom Mills up at Aston University in Birmingham that says, title is BBC, The Myth of Public Service. Yeah, because he's understood that it's been co-opted by the business world. Effectively, it's a kind of advertising for big business people. But look, you asked about the changes at the steering committee of Bilderberg. Now, one thing I've detected over the years is that the steering committee does not meet just before Bilderberg. It also meets in between times. Occasionally, like for example, a few years ago in Italy, someone will stumble across a meeting of the Bilderberg steering committee. I mean, they'll see a whole bunch of suits in a hotel. 9 times out of 10, you wouldn't know who they were. But some occasionally, particularly in Italy, people are up to speed on this stuff. They've had a whole history of interference and political intrigue in Italy through the 1980s, Operation Gladio, and the massive spending by the CIA in Italy to fix the elections, to keep the communists well away from power. The P2 scandal, you know, amazing actually to see a secret government suddenly revealed behind the scenes running the show. And so I think that's really what we're dealing with nowadays is a change in the quality of the steering committee. We've seen the death of David Rockefeller. I was privileged to have a chat with him at the Versailles Bilderberg conference. I think it was 2003. Just saw him having a walk outside the conference, had a little chat. Comes across as a very, very nice man. He didn't really want to talk about press scrutiny of Bilderberg, though. All he would talk to me about was the best fish restaurants in Paris, and he wanted to talk about those. So, of course, he doesn't want to be interrogated. These people are not used to being asked questions. And one of the things I understood in Dresden for the first time, really, was just how one trigger word can get these Bilderbergs going crazy, because no one would dare to discuss these things in these rich people's presence. That word was Brexit. You say the word Brexit, their hair goes up. They hated the idea. It's a little bit like, say, going to Prince Charles and talking about Princess Diana. It's not the sort of thing you would talk about to someone in these polite circles. So these powerful people gather around them a whole load of lackeys, really, who just tell them what they want to hear. And that's the problem, is we want to get through to those people and interrogate their view of the world. And the mainstream media is simply not doing that, Luke. So, okay, the steering committee, the Bilderberg steering committee, most important to recognise the appearance of Peter Thiel and Eric Schmidt on that committee. I mean, the banking family, the oil family, the Rockefeller, it seems to be out of the window. The bankers are still there, obviously. But really have a look at that committee and see who's there. Peter Thiel, massively important in Facebook. Facebook now is, you know, incredibly important all around the world as an intelligence gathering tool. You know, this is a bit like what the Nazis used, actually, in the 1930s, which was gathering information on everybody in Nazi Germany.
And if I could interrupt, also a psychological tool where they ran psychological tests on its users to make them feel certain emotions in order to manipulate them to see the market changes that they would have on their stock and on their advertising as well. So they do a lot of weird stuff, also in collaboration with the CIA, also with the deep state. So they are definitely in bed, and it's very fascinating to see this kind of takeover of these kind of technocrats, these AI industries, these kind of life extension companies as well, that have kind of recently had a major influence over Bilderberg, and they never did before.
That's right. And so Peter Thiel is almost the perfect person to look at in these two. We hardly hear, but when did you last see Peter Thiel on the news? He should be on there all the time. He should be being interrogated. This guy is you know, the main funder of Facebook, and he's now PayPal chief. But you've not just got PayPal and Facebook. You've also had Twitter. We've got, obviously, Eric Schmidt now on the steering committee from Google. I think what's going on here is that you've got a decision made by the old guard, David Rockefeller and people like that, and Henry Kissinger, that they've got to control the narrative of the entire internet, the world's media in the future. They've got most of the mainstream media pretty much sewn up. There's a little bit of flexibility around there, but this internet is scary to them. They don't do, you know, a lot of these people, they don't do emails, right? They don't want to have any kind of trace of this. That's why they get together at the Bilderberg conferences, is to make sure they can have one-to-one discussions, make little promises to each other. Who knows, veiled threats even, but that there's no trace. So anyone that thinks that Bilderberg could do its stuff on Skype or something is just barking up the wrong tree. You've got to be in the same space. The other thing is, there's possible questions about whether Trump's going to be there or not. Well, who knows? Interesting character, because he's not quite on board the program. But this is one of the things that, the reasons they bring these princes, these kings and queens, whatever they are, to Bilderberg, and these very rich, powerful people, is to schmooze. And Trump is definitely a candidate to be schmoozed, because he's pushing back, maybe not hard enough, but he's pushing back against the NATO, effectively NATO, West's agenda to extend its power into the Middle East and places like that.
And we have seen himself call himself a globalist and a nationalist at the same time. Very confusing, contrarian kind of messages. And it's very interesting to see the mainstream media love him when he kind of fulfills the orders of the deep state and the neoconservatives with his attacks on Iran and collusion with Israel and Saudi Arabia. But when he doesn't do what they're supposed to do, that is exactly when they attack him on getting two ice cream scoops. So it's a very duplicitous problem that I think is very hard to kind of wind down and figure out. But the media are a very huge part of this. And as we know, many media giants, many media owners, the conglomerate owners that control a lot of everything that we see and hear, they're at the Bilderberg meeting. They have a huge influence over it. And you were telling me about before how the Bilderberg is trying to control the media, that's one of their agendas. Can you expand on that?
Well, they're looking into the future, aren't they? They're seeing that the internet is where people are going to be. A lot of the content is online, and that is the thing that they want to control. So I think it's quite clear they've got to have the major players. Look, what's happened recently is there's been a complete, and in fact, this is probably the beginning of 2016, Google and Microsoft had various court cases against each other. They dropped them all. What's happening is they're all getting friends. They're acting like gangsters. Now, okay, you will divide up our territory. You have that bit of territory. We'll have that bit of territory. And they're squeezing out the other people like Nokia, BlackBerry, Samsung, these other users. I mean, we're talking about not just about people in charge of the operating systems and software. We're talking about the people who are actually building phones, etc., too, and other technology. So they're building a little oligopoly, I think you call it, when you've got two or three people controlling an area in the internet. There's also here in the UK, the Theresa May government is talking about absolutely awful changes to internet censorship. So they're scared people are actually using the internet as it was first intended to be used to actually find a way around the lies, the fake news of the mainstream media. You know, now some of the mainstream media is good, but they're pushing out all sorts of, I mean, all this stuff to do, I think, with the Russians have fixed the US elections is absolutely total fake news. And yet they're pointing the finger at the little bloggers and saying, you guys are fake news. No, they're not. These sorts of agendas are where the intelligence services, the military and the banking cartels are actually controlling. What happens is if they see mainstream news they don't like, they buy it up. they buy it up and they take it over. They put another editor in, they take a journalist out. I mean, we used to get this constantly in this country from Peter Mandelson, very much Blairite and right-wing end of the Labour Party, when Blair was in power, threatening journalists. If you ask that question, you'll be out of your job tomorrow. I've just heard something you've done. Don't ever do it again or you'll lose your job. You know, these kinds of threats to journalists are deadly serious. We've got to make sure we protect our journalists.
Or they call it fake news, like we're seeing Google and Facebook kind of push in their kind of purge of supposed incorrect news. Anything that questions the establishment, anything that's not controlled is a threat to them. And that's why we've seen Google and Facebook executive major ones attend the Bilderberg meeting, because I think they do understand that that is the next level of influence, the next level of control. And they're trying to kind of pin it down because they know it's one of the Achilles heels that they have right now. You know, the messages that we're getting across now, you know, YouTube owned by Google, executives of Google go to Bilderberg. This channel has been mainly demonetized. Our financing and income has been cut 3/4. And it's been happening all around, also because of many multiplicitous factors. I don't mean to be too conspiratorial around here, but the agenda is pretty set. You report on something that they don't want you to report on, they're going to make you an enemy, they're going to make you a target, and they're going to make sure that they shut you up. Now, you're talking about people saying that there's going to be censorship online here and that has a relation to this election. Could you expand on that in relation to what Theresa May said?
Well, effectively, the Tory party are now looking at enormous amounts of internet censorship and control. I mean, they're seeing this as something that they've got to do something about. It's kind of democracy bubbling up, then they've got to stop it. But look, it's not just Google, it's not just Peter Thiel's Facebook. We've also seen at the Bilderberg conferences social networks like LinkedIn. We've seen Amazon. We've seen Twitter. So all those kind of friendly, nice-looking things you see online, well, are they quite so friendly and nice-looking? Where's their funding coming from? There's been court cases that have uncovered evidence that these sorts of social media have very, very close links to the CIA, the NSA, funding sometimes going from the NSA to help these social media people do their job. So you've got to be it starts to look as if a lot of this social media, although it's in a way it's been quite revolutionary, is also very much tied to the intelligence services. Yeah. And as you express yourself freely in this wonderful way, that someone is actually profiling you, is building up whole profiles on people right across the planet. Yeah. So in a way, it's a little bit like what happened in Egypt. You do worry that might be what happens here, where you get a whole democracy movement through the Arab Spring, which, by the way, was the RAND Corporation. As Scott Bennett has pointed out, he was at the RAND Corporation when they were cooking up the Arab Spring, right? As something like the Arab Spring happens, you then get a social democracy movement. You get the Muslim Brotherhood elected to power. And what happens? Then there's suddenly another coup. And all those people who have worked so hard, stuck their necks out to get this new party, a democratic Egypt, are arrested, executed. So that's one of the things that worries me about the way social media has got these links to the intelligence people. I think we've just got to be very aware of how it's used. And I'm not saying don't use it, but just be aware that this is a potential agenda where that data, you expressing yourself could be used in the future.
Exactly, and that nothing is secret and nothing is safe, especially if you put it online. And I've been saying that for a number of years now, and it has been collaborated. We've been telling you about how the government watches and spies on you for years now, before Edward Snowden, before any of these revelations happened, because it only made common sense that someone in power, someone in authority, would do something. And it's very important to talk about the Bilderberg Group, because they're the ones who were pushing the agenda. They're the ones who are pulling the strings. They're the ones who set up consensus, which their own members admit to doing. And I think it's fascinating because we have members of the Bilderberg group, like Jeff Bezos, who are strongly against Donald Trump, but then we have other Bilderberg members like Kissinger, Petraeus, and McMaster, who have strong ties to Donald Trump. So is there an internal rift inside of Bilderberg and Donald Trump?
No. The way it works is they want to control both sides of the chessboard. That's the way these guys operate. Is there is a globalist agenda, which is negative in some ways and positive in some ways. And, of course, there's a nationalist far-right agenda, which is also in some ways positive. It's a secessionist movement, like the Scots have had enough of Westminster, so they want to, the Basques have had enough of Madrid, you know, quite reasonable, and people have had enough of Brussels. So what they're doing is they're setting these two against each other. The idea is a kind of divide and rule. It's the old-fashioned trick, isn't it? And it might be that each of those sides have both got something terminally wrong with it. So the idea is to, I think it's described as hardening the sides. When you want to create conflict, what you have to do is just kind of make sure that people have got to make a choice, that side or that side. You can't be in the middle anymore. But look, the reason I got interested in the Bilderbergs in the first place, as a journalist who was really annoyed that I didn't know about it, it seems to be such a powerful group controlling most of the money in the West, you know, and with all these military people coming in like Petraeus, etc., very, very serious military characters as well. The arms firms, the people that make money out of war.
And Eric Schmidt, who now works for the U.S. Pentagon with their cyber warfare system.
Yeah, was the involvement of Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, the first chairman of Bilderberg for 20 years. This guy was very friendly, etc., but it turned out he'd been lying about being one of the first members of the Nazi party and actually being a SS officer. So he'd lied about all that stuff, and so he was swanning around Europe pretending to be this kind of cool guy. And yet he was hiding his very keen Nazi past from the 1930s. That, to me, if you've got a chairman of an organisation for 20 years, and he was kicked out by the Lockheed scandal in 1975, very embarrassing for him, someone that's a Nazi chairing the group for the first 20 years, I think we should be paying a bit of attention.
Just like you were talking about before, it's the old Hegelian dialect, divide and conquer, left versus right, not up and down, which is the common sense thing to understand. And where are all the you know, mainstream media outlets? Everyone's being called a Nazi. Like, Bilderberg should be the major focus of this since the original creation of him. It just makes no sense at all. Tony, I thank you so much for your precise information. The link to your radio show and information will be in the description below, so definitely check out Tony Gosling's information. And I'm just going to leave you with the last word because you've been a wealth of knowledge and information. I just want to leave you with the audience to say whatever you want.
Well, look, simple, put it simple. Go and witness this, right? Go and have a look at the Bilderberg meeting. Go and see these guys, even if you can see them going in and out. And even if you can't speak to them, because I got a lot in Dresden last year out of actually chatting to some of the Bilderbergers. Fascinating to see their body language, the way they react, the fact that actually not like, actually Rockefeller, David Rockefeller was very amenable, very friendly guy. A lot of the other people like James A. Johnson and Jacob Wallenberg, who, by the way, their family were involved in financing and helping the Nazis in the Second World War, and his family is still involved. They're the main bankers in Sweden. So I'd say go. And if you can't actually get to speak to a Bilderberger, interrogate them gently, be nice to them, you know, say, look, hey guys, you know, come on, get on the program for the rest of the world, not your own program. Then simply chat to everyone else that's there, and you'll find you'll always meet other interesting people. It's one of the things we always did in the hotels in the evenings out. You'll find a load of fascinating people that are coming to witness this, because if the mainstream media won't witness it, we need to do that.
Thank you so much, Tony. You're awesome and incredible. Again, check out all the information for Tony in the description below. And stay tuned to this YouTube channel, because we're going to be there on the ground, usually live. I think we're going to do a lot of live coverage, mainly for our safety and security.
For my show, I hope. I hope you'll be doing my show on the Friday.
You got it, Tony. I'm there. 100% guaranteed. Stay tuned, subscribe, and thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting real independent media. Love you.